The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Oh, yeah. Let's get excited. It's Jim Hightower's opening a couple of notes, and of course we'll have two Jim Hightower commentaries that will come up. Usually they come up about halfway through the new WHFR Journal, and that's just to get your body moving and start thinking about Jim Hightower. Yeah, and today, in fact, he's going to be talking about Beware the Tomato Tamperers. That's right. I think he's talking about genetically modified vegetables. And the second commentary is going to be to save the tree, nurture the grass roots. And I think he's talking about what our favorite national populist always talks about, and that is, let's get back to the people. Let's see what the people really need and want, and let's listen to them. Well, we'll find out the details, because I'm no Jim Hightower, certainly. My name is Jay Koronik. I'm station advisor here at WHFR.FM. Remember, do as I say, not necessarily as I do. And with me in the studio is our WHFR news director, Kevin. Welcome, Kevin.
Great to be back, Jay.
Do you suffer from trichodecaphobia?
I don't know, but right now I'm suffering from skin peeling phobia from a sunburn.
Ah, yes.
I feel like a snake.
Beware of the sun. Uh-huh. So it wasn't under a tanning lamp. That was Mother Nature's big globe in the sky.
The bright dot in the sky on Lake Belleville fishing.
I've seen
weekend.
It briefly before I go blind. Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, no, we want to warn you, it's going to be a warm weekend. We're going to be having fun down at Concert of Colors. And I say we because I mean WHFR. We're broadcasting live from their number two stage. Number two, but they try harder. That is called the Comerica Diversity Stage, although it's also known as the Music Box Stage. There's a lot of dancing, and it's a big area, and it's really fun. And we have broadcast the live music with commentaries and interviews with a direct phone feed, phone patch from down there. It sounds pretty good, actually. It's not a cell phone for the last couple of years, but this time they want us to do it all the way through. So we'll be starting with the music performances about 3 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday, and on Sunday, going all the way until 10 p.m. at night, with the usual caveat, as long as technology permits. So, you know, could be a little bug somewhere in the system. But we hope always, and it's worked out the last 5 years, that we can do that for you. And we're going to do every big performance. Now, of course, the main stage is actually the Symphony, Detroit Symphony Hall, or also known as Orchestra Hall. And that's going to have tremendous artists there. Saturday night, the big final performance is a, sort of a Don Was local jazz review. So Don Was, a great record producer from Detroit, and now the owner of Blue Note Music. He bought the record company because he's going to start releasing more jazz, maybe more Detroit jazz, too. That would be cool,
That'd
Don.
That'd be a good thing.
Yeah, but he's actually featuring a review of Detroit jazz artists and on Saturday night, and that's going to be great. And Sunday night, George Clinton, who's a, I guess, sort of a smooth jazz, a funk jazz artist. I'm not familiar with his work. I thought he was the former president. What did I know? But no, Bill Clinton played the sax. I'm not sure what instrument George Clinton plays. Kevin, are you familiar with George Clinton's work?
No.
Okay. But I know a lot of people are going to go down there. It's free, folks. You say, well, how much is it? It's free. And the music, the doors open about 2 o'clock. There's a lot of nonprofit groups that have tables. Our WHFR station, we have our information table giving away from some free stuff, in fact, right in the lobby. Oh, big-time lobby of the Max M. Fisher Center. That's what it's called. That's where Orchestra Hall is and the diversity stage, officially called the Music Box, where we'll be broadcasting from. So come on down and see us from 3 o'clock until 10 o'clock or so at night. We'll be broadcasting. I think the lobby desk will be open till 8 or 8:30 until the main stage gets started. And it's just going to be a great time to be had by all. And you say, well, I've got kids. Well, bring the kids. It's fantastic because besides the live music, when was the last time they saw live music of all different kinds of styles and so on indoors, which is air-conditioned beautifully? What a sumptuous place the Max M. Fisher Center is. But also, outside, they have what's called the Rhythm Stage, just south of the Max M. Fisher building itself, just out and about and around the corner. There's another stage of live performance and all kinds of vendors, too, on that street with food and drinks and beverages. And there's usually a clothing, ethnic clothing sales area. And as I said, inside there's also, besides some nonprofit organization tables talking about their good community work. There's also a large room that they devote to food sales too, which is usually catered by one of the restaurants in that area, in the Wayne State area. And last year was it Traffic Jam Snug, but anyway, very very good and very reasonably priced. There is some free parking on the street, like Woodward. This is at Woodward, south of Warren, a couple blocks south of Warren. It is north of the Fox Theater on Woodward, okay, by about a mile or so, I think. And there are, of course, guarded, gated parking lots all around that Max M. Fisher Center, too. But don't go to the Fisher Building, you know. But I think kids will have a great time. You can spend 3-4 hours. If it's hot outside, you can spend more time inside, or you can just go outside to see what's going on briefly and then come back in. We were just really happy to always be invited to be part of that. And you can listen to it. If you can't get down there, you can listen to the number 2 stage live music right over WHFR 89.3 FM or on the internet from WHFR.fm.
One thing that I'm surprised is the huge diversity of music being played down there. They got everything from gospel. I mean, they have Indian funk, rock, Caribbean, electronic dance. So it's almost every kind of genre is represented.
That's always been the idea, although, you know, who they can bring in from around the world usually depends on how many sponsors they have, because they don't charge any money to get in, so they can't raise money to pay for, you know, plane tickets for people from Africa or China or somewhere. But they still get a tremendous assortment of people, and As you said, a lot of variety in styles. Just because, as we know here at WHFR, there's a lot of local artists in a lot of those different formats who are doing great work, and they don't get heard on the regular commercial stations much. They do get heard a lot and quite often here on WHFR. So we see a lot of our old friends. Like, starting off Saturday is going to be Harper and the Midwest Kind, which is a blues band. It's based right here in Michigan. Harper took up residence in Michigan, made it his home, but he actually came here to the United States from Australia. And there just wasn't that many blues lovers in Australia, I guess, to keep him going. And when he came to the U.S., he didn't stop in L.A. He came to Michigan first because he heard how great Michigan blues were, and they are. And he now tours widely throughout the U.S. and sometimes to Europe. But he's based right here in Michigan, and he loves Michigan. His last album was recorded live at the Windsor, Ontario, Canada, Blues Museum. They actually have a museum that is painted all blue. No, I'm just kidding. It's about blues music artists, especially Canadian blues music artists, and the album sounds great. We play it on our blues station here because it's a really good album. He also includes a specially made didgeridoo. Oh, that is a long, deep-sounding aboriginal music device from Australia.
Those things are hard to play, too.
Yeah, and he's got, besides he's got the wind for it, sometimes there's different lengths. Some are like 6 feet long, the shortest one. Others are 15 or 20 feet long, and you just sort of blow into it, and it goes, I don't know if that comes over the radio, because it's lower than that. But you can do tunes and tones, and he's actually got one that has some sort of variable tone setting that he had specially made. And it's not the key instrument in his blues music, but it's usually part of most of the songs he does, at least on that last album. And so we're happy to we'll be happy to see him again. In fact, one of the first radio stations he appeared on in the U.S. performing live when he got here back around mid-90s, I guess about 15 years ago now, was WHFR.
Oh, nice.
We were in the basement of the Fine Arts Building, you know. It was up close and personal, right on the other side of the guest mics we put out for him to perform with his small group at that time. So all good friends. And as I said, in the music box where we are, wow, you want to dance to the music? Big area. And you got kids, older people, boogieing up and down, dancing together, dancing separately. Not too much room to dance in orchestra hall. That's intended for, you know, sit down, appreciate the music. I think some people do boogie a little at the front, but this is, we can get like 200, 300 people dancing at the same time, as well as bleacher types, but comfortable seating for 200 or 300 also. So it's a big room, a lot of dance space. And so they have a little more of the dance-oriented rhythms in the music box, and that's what we'll be broadcasting from. So I hope you can make it down there. Otherwise, hey, tune us in. Let's move on. This show is, besides about, well, some cultural events in the area, is about news and alternative views here in Dearborn and the surrounding area. And last week I did introduce story from DearbornPatch.com about the Hemlock Pool area in Dearborn. There was a meeting, a discussion with people in the area about the Special Assessment District, or SAD. And I wasn't clear on a few points, and I guess I'm still not clear on a few points, but apparently, according to the story from last Sunday, July 8th Press and Guide, which is written by Emily Mormon, who is a new writer. I hadn't seen her name before. Maybe it's the first time she got on the front page. So welcome to Dearborn, or welcome to the Press and Guide, Emily. And it's a good long story, but this is what's happening now with that. Now, again, their Hemlock Pool is one that was closed last year. It needed maintenance and upgrading, and there wasn't money enough for that, and so it was one of the two in Dearborn that were closed. But if in this upcoming special ballot election, and we'll talk about that in a second, passes, if a majority of people who send back their ballots say, yes, I will pay the extra $60 to $75 a year for free access to our pool, okay, no more pool passes needed, okay, for those people in this area. I'm sure they'll get some sort of ID cards, you know, for themselves that proves that they're residents when they go in to use it. But nonetheless, they won't have to buy a separate City of Dearborn pass. And by the way, other people outside the area, they will have to get a separate Dearborn pool pass. But if they buy that, it's good at all the pools in Dearborn as well as Hemlock. They're going to try to make sure, though, if the pool gets to capacity, that only the people from the special assessment district, at least they'll be the first ones in. And if there's still room up to capacity, they will let other people who pay for the Dearborn pass to get in the pool. So it gives you sort of exclusive access to a swimming pool that's no more than a block or two, I guess, away from your house. I'm just guessing. I don't know how long a block or two is, but it's 1,000 residences that are going to be in this new district.
I bet they were happy it was open last week when it was 100 degrees out.
Well, it's not open yet. But
oh, I thought you said it was already.
No, what's happening here is that they collected 400, a group from that area collected 480 signatures, and I don't know how many they needed, but it was way more than what they needed to bring about this special ballot. And these ballots, it says here in the story, are going to be sent to all 1,000 of those homes in the supposed newly created district, or the district that would be given the special tax assessment each year in order to pay for the pool. And if they get a majority of the ballots that they return back saying yes, it'll pass. And then everybody will have to pay. Well, that's a question, because apparently the pool needs to be totally rebuilt, as well as the pool buildings, you know, the changing areas. Oh, it needs major reconstruction. So I don't think that can happen this year. But certainly it'll be open by next year, I guess. The reason, in fact, the city closed it was because the pool and its supporting buildings are in such bad repair, you just can't open it. Even if you had the money for the water and the you know, the pool guards and the chlorine, it still wouldn't be be usable. Not safe for one reason or another, health or safety reasons. So, but it would give them an exclusive community pool. Do I think $65 to $75 is worth it for the your nearby community? Yeah, I'd probably vote for that. But I've got, you know, a stable pension check, which is like a stable income for those people that have seen their pension checks, like the state of Michigan. Well, mine too. Have to start paying that 4.35% tax, even on my pension, that I didn't expect when I first knew I was going to get it. So I'm going to be getting less in the next couple of years on a regular basis. And of course, prices still go up for food and other things. So people on limited incomes like I am, we're concerned about that. But I think it's a good deal. Now, I don't like swimming outdoors. You know, your problem, the sun.
Yeah, the sunburn.
I don't know what evening hours they have and whether or not the pool is lit. I'd go there after you know, sunset anyway, at least for an hour or two. If it was lit, then. But I think it's kind of crazy and dangerous to be out there in midday swimming in the pool. So we'll see what that's going to be about. But my questions for Emily and the pressing guide to follow up on, because I even read to page 2A. First of all, it's amazing that a special assessment district around these pools can be created by as few as 480 signatures from people in that area. And then they just send the ballot out in the mail. And if you don't see it and you don't send it back, and a majority of people who do send it back say yes, then you're going to have to pay that tax. Of course, you'll also get access to that pool when it's ready. But I had no idea that an SAD could happen so fast. I mean, they're not even waiting to the August primary. You don't even vote for this in a primary. You just send back the ballot within a limited amount of time. And that's not in the paper either. In other words, we know the ballots are going out within 2 weeks, but how long do you have to return them? I mean, it doesn't say. Okay? So the city clerk's office said they're going to send it out within the next 2 weeks, and that was from last Sunday, so 1 week is almost gone. And so I don't know how long they have to return it. I'd love to tell you because, oh, by the way, that 480 total is nearly five times the minimum required for a SAD area tax assessment vote.
So they don't even need 100. Not even
100. So there's got to be 100 people out of 1,000 homes, and I guess it can't be the kids signing. Probably has to be...
somebody 18.
Yeah, at least of legal age. Do they have to be registered?
A legal homeowner.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think just a legal resident, Dearborn resident, but do they have to be registered or just be of legal age in Dearborn? You know, if you have to be registered to vote, that diminishes it down to half the number of people in the area. And I know other petitions that are circulated, you can't sign unless you are a registered voter.
Yeah, or a taxpayer in that district.
Well, maybe. Right. Yeah, you could be an absentee landlord and be paying tax from living somewhere else. But, so a lot of questions about the set. I think it sounds pretty dangerous that if fewer than 100 people in your area near a pool can create a special assessment district, and then these ballots go out in the mail. You know, a lot of people get a lot of junk mail. I know I do. Oh, yeah. We might send that, I mean, just throw it away, not thinking it was going to affect our taxes by $60 to $75 next year. Now, maybe we'd be in favor of it, but I'm saying a lot of people, they're just going to toss it out. Oh, my God. And then they won't be able to say yay or nay. And then they'll be surprised when they get extra assessment in the next year. If I didn't say, I think I would vote for it nonetheless, limited budget if it was in my area. I don't have a pool in my area, although I live very close to the big pool, the one inside the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center.
They have a pool in there?
Oh, yeah, big time. Couple of pools, waiting pool. My daughter and granddaughter just buy day passes usually. My daughter used to buy the monthly pass before she went into school. Now, she's a school teacher, as I've told many times over, in Southfield. But she has to get an early start. So they used to have it open at 5 a.m.
Nice.
In the morning. So she'd be there by 5:30 or 6 and swim a half an hour, wash up, redress, and then get on to school by 7. Well, they changed the hours. Now they're not open, I think, till 6:30 or sometime. So
she can't do that anymore.
But every now and then she'll take the granddaughter over, and they'll just buy daily passes. Actually, what they did for the summer, and actually it's in the paper, too, just this week, which is a month too late, they have swimming classes for kids.
Nice.
And so my granddaughter, who is only 4.5, is learning to swim now.
Nice.
And so the cost of that is cheaper than the day pass for my daughter and my daughter and my granddaughter. Of course, my daughter doesn't swim, but she watches my granddaughter get a chance to swim for an hour. I think it's an hour lesson once or twice a week. And so it's actually cheaper to be in the swim class, at least for at her age anyway. And I don't think we can have an SAD in my neighborhood in order to let us in the center pool, because I like that, although I haven't been there swimming, but that's indoors, so. Okay, no sun to kill me. Yeah, so I'd probably definitely vote for an SAD in my neighborhood if it was all about the pool that's in the center. But I don't think they're going to do that. That's not the idea of these. But it's a little bit dangerous, I think, to have so few signatures required to get the proposal, and then it's not on the ballot in your area. Just it's not on the regular election date. And of course, not many people vote in the August primaries anyway. You're lucky to get 20% of the people out, even in a big-time election year like this. So, I don't know, maybe they'll get more votes this way by sending the ballots to the homes. But how long do they have to get it back? I don't know that. So if anybody from the Pressing Guide is listening, or if Emily, you're listening, maybe you could do a follow-up story and answer my questions for the sake of the community. Right, and if you want to know, folks, you can call the city clerk's office. I assume that the ballots, when they go out, if they haven't already, will say what the deadline is for returning them.
So, I'm sure they will.
So those people that are involved, fine. Just a final comment. So, well, where does Save Our Pool stand on this? Well, they want citywide support, as they've said. They're not happy. This citywide group to Save Our Pools is not happy with the idea of this single individual SAD. But people in that area said, well, we want to go ahead. We know that Save Our Pools doesn't want SADs across Dearborn that are voted by all of Dearborn. They don't want that because the city didn't want to give details about what that future money would go for and what those costs would remain at. You know, if all of a sudden the city said, well, we got to actually collect twice as much for the pools than what we said. Well, do you have no say in that? You can't change that once it's set up? That was and so those questions were never answered. Not the mayor, not city council ever answered any of those questions that Save Our Pools group, Kristen Taylor, who we interviewed, she's one of the members of that group, brought up on May 14th. So that's why the Hemlock Pool area people went ahead, at least the 480 people, a few coordinators to get the signatures. They went ahead, they're going ahead with their own SAD. So if it catches on, maybe other areas want to do it, but that's going to be so, you know, spotty. You know, oh, we can, you know, we pay for the pool, but over there you don't pay for the pool. And I don't know. It seems like we should do something for the city as a whole. Save Our Pools said they would want to have something on the ballot in November to extend the maintenance cost for the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, and build into that proposal that addition, which is expiring. So all the costs to build the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, it's paid off now. Wow, good. What has it been, 15 years, 10 years, whatever? But it's all paid off, so you won't have that on your tax roll. But they said, look, if we just extend it, then that'll be about that $60 to $75 per person, and we'll put free pools, maybe even including at the center, for everybody in Dearborn.
And that would cover all the existing pools already
right.
in Dearborn.
And maybe, of course, I don't know, would it open the Hemlock and the other pool that's been closed? I'm not sure. And, of course, nobody on the city council, and not the mayor's office, has done any language, has prepared anything like that for November. So since they've been sort of stonewalled, either for information or moving ahead with that extended millage, which we're already paying, yeah. Most people don't realize we're already paying it. Of course, it's going to not be there starting either later this year or next January.
And how much does that average a year, approximately?
About the same thing
about
the pool
the,
thing
the
would be, 60 to 75.
Okay.
That's what I'm estimating. I could be very wrong. But that's how much it was to help build and pay for the center, which I don't know if it's sustaining itself at this point. But the city is paying, you know, the maintenance and upgrade costs from now on from its own budget, and so the building costs will be paid off. But hey, I'd be in favor of voting for free pool access anywhere, including the center. If it includes the center, because that's by me, I'd vote for continuing that. But hey, nobody started the petition. Although I'd recommend SOP, start it yourself. I mean, that's what they did in Hemlock area. Come on, you got more activists, Kristen Taylor and the others. Write it yourself. And but they're saying if we do that, it would be for next year. So they're not going to start a ballot issue proposal this year. It'd be too many signatures needed too quickly to get on November. Again, this is just a small area, the Hemlock Pool, of 1,000 homes. You could almost go door to door and get those 480 signatures probably in a couple of nights' work with if you've got a couple of volunteers, you know. So trying to get enough to get it on the ballot for the whole city, they think they might go for it next year. And then, of course, would that mean the people in the SAD wouldn't have to pay that anymore? They just start paying the citywide one? I would assume so, that the SAD would then, and they could write language to that effect.
Hopefully they would.
If the SAD was approved, then the language of that proposal from SOP, Save Our Pools, would just say that's, you know, that SAD will be dissolved and those people will just start paying to the city for the good of all pools. And then the people in Hemlock would have free access to all the pools in the city. And as I said, I hope that includes the center because that's the one I want to get into. Okay, anyway. It's the only one by me. There's no other small pool that's close to me. So I'm sorry. Self-interest, you know. And of course, that other thing was they want to expand the city of Dearborn. Has said that they want just two pools that they'd be willing to pay for without additional money, the Dunworth and the Ford Woods pools. And if there was only two, not six like we have now, or seven with Hemlock if it comes back online, they would be expanded so that they'd have higher capacities. And they're going to use money for an expanded Ford Woods Aquatic Center. So that's the building associated with it? Or is that an indoor pool? Anyway, so the city, without any additional money, said that was the mayor's proposal. That's what we will move towards. But now these other proposals are starting, and we'll see where that goes. So I don't think the city's going to move until they have to, and until this SAD and the SOP maybe they will have a petition for a citywide ballot next year. So I don't think we're going to see any more pools closed for a while. We know they're not going to close this year, but what's going to happen for next year, we don't know. Wow, that's That's a lot to say. I'm sorry, folks. That was 28 minutes into the hour just on the hemlock thing. But it is an interesting democratic principle of democratic politics. What is an SAD, Special Assessment District? How can it be created and for what purposes? What other purposes, by the way? Can I have better leaf collection? Or, you know, if we create a SAD in my neighborhood? I mean, I don't know.
Trash pickup 2 days a week.
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, who knows what other services? Will they cut my grass, too? Can I have an SAD for community grass cutting? I mean, well, I'm just saying, there's something on your agenda. Find out in the city, for the city clerk's office or whatever. Kevin's going to do this research sometime before next year, I hope. What about an SAD? Who can comment on that? Maybe Ted Tefalsky can tell us if he gets here. We've invited you, Ted.
Hold of him.
Yeah, we've invited you. I know you're president of city council, and that's not your day job, so you're a very busy guy. And in the summer, we all take vacations, but you're invited to speak for the city council, or at least for yourself, here on the Journal. And we know you've been busy, but it's a standing invite. Haven't had you on before, but, you know, Mayor O'Reilly has survived, George DeRaney, Suzanne Serini, a lot of people have survived our interviews. I know we're tough, but we try to be fair, and I'd love to get some updates on these things, and maybe he knows about the, you know, how SADs come about. I bet he does. Or we'll ask Mayor O'Reilly the next time we see him, maybe at homecoming, and we'll definitely see him at homecoming, I know. That's August 3, 4, and 5. WHFR is going to be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, broadcasting every hour from our booth just south of the bridge leading into Ford Field in West Dearborn. And that's going to be a lot of fun, as always. Well, let's get to those Jim Hightower spots that are desperate to play. They're just, what do they say, like money burning a hole in your pocket? They're like MP3s burning a hole in our computer hard drive here. So just take a listen, and we have more local news and alternative views. But first, beware the tomato tamperers and saving the tree by nurturing the grassroots. WHFR.FM, station making waves.
Not good for you and me.
No, wait a minute.
Take the tomato.
Hey,
truly a natural.
I'll take it. Let's start over.
Wonder. Agribusiness no. Profiteers, however, want...
I want the beginning, Jim. Here we go.
Some people are too smart for your own good. Food geneticists, for example. These technicians have the smarts to tinker with the inner workings of Mama Nature's own good foods, but not the smarts to leave well enough alone. During the past half century, their productive tinkering devolved into outright tampering with our food, mostly to serve big agribusiness corporations that wanted nature's design altered in ways that would fatten their bottom lines. Never mind that the alterations created by these smart people were not good for you and me. Take the tomato, truly a natural wonder. Agribusiness profiteers, however, wanted it to do unnatural things, so voila! The genetic tamperers dutifully produced the amazing industrial tomato. It's a techno marvel made to endure long-distance shipping, be artificially ripened to appear tomatoey red, and last an ungodly amount of time without rotting. But taste? Forget it. There's more flavor in the carton. This led to a grassroots rebellion among consumers and small farmers, resulting in the phenomenal growth in farmers' markets and stores that offer nature's own locally produced and heirloom varieties, untouched by the smart ones. But look out, the tomato tamperers are back in the lab. They've discovered that a mutated gene they had bred into the corporate tomato switches off other genes that would cause the fruit to develop flavor. The answer, they say, is not less technology, but more. By artificially re-engineering the DNA structure of the plant, they can bypass that naughty mutated gene and switch on some of the flavor genes. But do we really want to eat genetically engineered tomatoes? This is Jim Hightower saying, I can just see the agribusiness ad, buy our industrial tomatoes, now genetically flavored. Better yet, buy the local tomatoes, which don't need a smart geneticist or an ad to deliver real flavor.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Washington keeps handing massive bailouts to Wall Street giants and multi-billion dollar annual subsidies to the likes of Big Oil, which is a nice boost to the bottom lines of the one percenters. But these giveaways do absolutely nothing to perk up America's grassroots economy, which not only is where the rest of us live and work, but also is the only place that can generate real national prosperity. Congress can't seem to grasp a basic law of nature. You can't keep a mighty tree alive, much less expect it to thrive, by only spritzing the fine leaves at its tippy top. The fate of the whole tree depends on nurturing the grassroots. Sadly, America's corporate and political powers today are content to be a bunch of leaf spritzers, blithely oblivious to the dangerous shriveling of the grassroots. To witness the damage they're doing, just look at our nation's desiccated minimum wage. Set at $7.25 an hour 3 years ago, its real value has since been gutted by inflation, reducing the wage's current purchasing power to a sub-poverty level of $6.75 an hour. That's only $14,000 a year for full-time work. Not only would increasing it help these hard-working people make ends meet, but it also would provide a direct jolt of nourishment to our overall economy. It's been shown again and again that every dime of a minimum wage hike is spent by its recipients, circulating upward in our local economies as they increase their purchases of such basics as food, kids' clothing, and health care. This is Jim Hightower saying, this kind of percolate-up economics works for the many, not just the wealthiest few, and that helps, at least minimally, to restore a bit of moral balance to an economy and society now being torn apart by gross inequality. For more information on raising today's poverty wage, go to timeforaraise.org.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And here's Jay and Kevin again with more local news and views. Looking at the press and guide from last Sunday still for a little while, if you're in Dearborn Heights, you have fewer voting districts. Okay, and you're going to be getting in the mail, if you haven't already, a new voter registration card that tells you where to vote and what the number of your new district is. So you may not, if you haven't seen it yet or haven't looked closely at it for August and also for November, the two big elections coming up this year, read it closely because it may be a totally different location than where you've been used to going in the past. And don't worry about the number, okay, because the district numbers are all changing. Like John Dingell's district was 15th to the U.S. Congress. And now it's pretty much the same from Trenton all the way to Ann Arbor. There have been some minor changes to the boundaries, but it's now the 12th, U.S. Congress the 12th. So don't worry about the number of the district. But people in Dearborn Heights, registered voters, you're getting new cards. If you haven't seen it already, take a look on the card. It tells you the location of the voting, the polling place, whether it's a church or a school. It may be different. And they saved a lot of money. What they did was their new city clerk Walter Prusiewicz said that they've taken a survey of where there's been more voter turnout, and now they've combined some districts based on that. And of course, my feeling is, well, what if all of a sudden everybody who's registered actually decides to vote? Then there's going to be too many people in one of these districts. But they're realistically, pragmatically combining districts based on voter turnout numbers. And shame for all of you that don't vote. But if you all go out and vote, it may be a little crowded. But do that. Oh, yeah, don't worry. Get in line and stay there. If it's supposedly if you're in line by 8 p.m., on any voting day, they have to let you vote. Didn't happen in Detroit a few years ago. Actually turned some people away from a couple of polls after about 8:30. You couldn't even get in line, and that was just downright wrong. But
they actually if you're in line before 8 or by 8, then you can vote.
That's right. Yes.
And they were turning people away even though
who had been in line. Yeah, there was some confusion about who was in line, or you just got here, didn't you? Basically, people at the polls, they wanted to go home.
Yeah.
So these are not professionals. These are volunteers. I think they work for minimum wage or something, or maybe nothing. I don't know. But that was just an anomaly. It wasn't the principle in Detroit or anything. The principle was if you're in line by 8 p.m., in line, okay, then that should be good no matter how long it takes to get your process. Now, usually in Dearborn Heights, especially for the August primary, August 7th, folks, Tuesday, August 7th, mark it on your calendars, You don't have to wait at all. Just go right in. And because only about 20% of the registered voters show up, shame on you,
yeah,
who don't. In November, we're lucky to get 50%, 60% in a presidential election. Shame on all of you who don't vote in that one either. But nonetheless, you don't have to wait much in Dearborn. I doubt Dearborn Heights ever had big lines. I can't figure out why Detroit almost always has long lines in some precincts. They just don't have enough precincts.
Yeah. I've never really had to wait at all where I vote.
Okay. So good. Well, that's what
well,
it should
no,
be.
Well, no, that's not good. I mean,
no?
Yeah, like you said, get everybody out. Come
well,
on.
Yeah.
Come
yeah.
on, vote.
But I'm just saying, be careful there, folks. If you're in Dearborn Heights for August 7th election, look at that card. You don't want to go to the wrong place and then get frustrated and not vote. So they're going to be saving $2,000 for each precinct that they closed. I think they closed, five precincts. They merged 23 into 18, so they saved $10,000 right there. Big deal, $10,000, pocket change. But just want to make you aware that that's changed there, and it's based on voter turnout numbers. So everything should be good. Okay, I was wanted to commend the Dearborn Press and Guide because it had editorial comments. And they're never named, but I think that actually comes from Tim Powers, who's their editor, managing editor. Usually the editorial will be written by the managing editor. Sometimes the publisher sort of pushes in and decides to write them, and they don't tell you who that is. But the regional publisher is Jim O'Rourke, by the way, for the Press and Guide. Tim Powers is the editor. So there's a slight chance that Jim O'Rourke could push in and dump that in there. But I don't think it's typical. If it's called an editorial, it should be from the editor. That's my logic anyway. Well, last Sunday, the point was, right to free speech is not always popular. And here's their commentary from the Press and Guide newspaper itself. There probably are plenty of military veterans who disagree with the recent U.S. Supreme Court decision that overturned a federal law making it a crime to lie about receiving a military medal. By a 6-3 vote, the court said the Stolen Valor Act that Congress adopted in 2006, took them 6 years to figure out a Supreme Court decision on this, takes a while to go through the lower courts, you know, but that violated that act, violated the constitutional right to free speech. The decision did not come as a surprise to legal scholars. While we can't think of any nonviolent action as despicable as falsely claiming, so it's not as despicable as falsely claiming you're a U.S. war hero, lying about your past is rather common. A lot of people get jobs, and they put down their resume that they worked here or worked there, they have this educational degree or not. And, of course, in some local colleges, it's been a scandal. Wayne County Community College. I'm sorry, did I say that? But yeah, about 10, 15 years ago, big scandal. They hadn't been checking. They ask for the proof of the credentials, but they hire someone and say, we've got to receive the transcript that legitimizes your degree in a month or two or 6 months, whatever. Well, they don't do that anymore, and neither do we, of course. If you don't have that transcript, that legal proof directly from the institution that is supposed to have granted your degree, you can't start working. Okay, so, but people still do it in other places, other businesses, they get busy. And it's not like having a degree is a big-time legal document from a big-time university, and they send it directly. We don't accept those Xerox copies anymore either. And so it's all very official. If someone said I worked for 10 years as an accountant at this company in California, kind of hard to check on that. I mean, somebody's got to sit down in the personnel office or human resources, as they call it now, and they have to make a phone call. And then maybe the number you put down was actually not the company, but your best friend in California who's, yeah, this is so-and-so business, you know, and they answer their phone that way, and they have their voicemail set up that way for a month or two to help you out. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to sneak through your credentials, and it's not illegal. Although eventually you get fired, I guess, if the company thinks you're incompetent and they finally find out you didn't have that background. If you lied on that application, usually that means you're going to be fired.
I seem to remember hearing about a couple of doctors that faked their credentials and were practicing medicine.
Right.
Like that.
Because, you see, you can actually fake a diploma and hang it on your wall, too. And so who checks on that? I mean, was one of your patients who get sick? Will they actually try to see if that's a real gold certificate, a gold stamp on it, or what? Obviously, you can just call. I think there's a licensing bureau in the state of Michigan or the Michigan branch of the American Medical Association that will have those doctors' certificates on record. But if you don't call, if nobody checks, then the assumption is you got it. But that's not against the law. It just will finally get you out of your job. Well, saying that you, it used to be for the last 6 years, saying that you were a U.S. vet, a veteran of the military, whether you fought in a foreign war or not, it was actually against the law. Now, it's a misdemeanor, but it was against the law. And you could get jail time, I guess, or have to pay a fine. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, nope, since lying about your past is rather common and it's not illegal in any other context, it shouldn't be against the law. Okay? There'll be other consequences, but it's not against the law. As we said on the show, it's amazing, and I've always surprised people that don't know this, that lying is not against the law in America.
Only if you're sworn in under oath in a court.
Only in a court of law, and you actually say you're going to tell the truth. If you take that pledge or oath, either on a Bible or just, if you don't believe in Bibles, you can just, it's just an oath between you and your government for that trial only, that you're going to tell the truth. And, of course, if you don't, they can put you in jail for perjury, lying to the jury. That's the only place it is, other than, I think I've mentioned, sometimes the FDA, the Federal Government Food and Drug Administration, will catch commercials on TV, either locally or nationally, that go too far. They say things that aren't true about their product. And so that's lying, or stretching the truth, which is lying. Yeah. And they can force them to take the commercial off the air or to do make goods. In other words, they can actually force them to make another commercial that says the truth.
Yeah,
and
I remember,
says that it really wasn't the way you thought you heard it before.
I remember Monsanto's Roundup product recently underwent that. They had biodegradable listed on it. Well, mm-hmm. That was obviously not the case, so they made them take that off the product label.
About 20 years ago, there was a new bread came in the market called Slender. It was a bread, folks. Okay, and not a drink at that time. Or was it called Slim? Well, anyway, they said 50% fewer calories. Hey, so they sold a lot. And the FDA came down and said, you better go on the air and tell people the truth. It's because you sliced the bread 50% thinner. Yeah, that's how you get 50%. So you have a sandwich, and you're still 50% hungry. I mean, it's not as much bread, or you're 30%, 33 1/3% more hungry because you didn't have that extra amount of bread that you expected to have. There was another one about bread I remember from 20, 25 years ago. The bread said, we have so much fiber in it. Of course, fiber in general is good for you. Everybody needs a certain amount of fiber every day in their food, which you can get even from meat, but also from, I think, potatoes and other vegetables.
Apples are
string beans,
source.
Apples of fiber, yeah. So you can get fiber in a number of places. Well, they said, we have so much fiber there. And the FDA said, we think you better tell them where that fiber's coming from. Pregnant pause. It came from crushed up trees.
Trees?
It was ground up sawdust, pulp. From trees. I guess they got a real deal on it. And so, now, it's not, you can eat sawdust, apparently, if it's ground up really fine. It is fiber.
And
it won't kill you. It is organic. It's a real tree. It's not like a telephone post or something that's full of all those toxic chemicals to keep bugs from eating them. It's just a tree, folks. But they said, we think the public, I mean, good for the FDA. We think the public would like to know, sort of like the beware of the tomato tamperers that we just heard from Jim Hightower. That's genetically modified flavor. Say, oh, this tomato tastes so good. It must be nice and fresh. No, they put it in there artificially, folks. So we think the public should know about that. And that's the scandal with GMA products, genetically modified organisms. You need to be told. In Germany, God bless them,
they don't even accept them.
No, they say they got to be labeled.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm thinking of
and what
countries.
Has happened since they labeled things GMA or not GMO. GMO or GMO, yeah. GMO or not GMO, non-GMO. Well, the sale of GMO, almost natural fruits and vegetables has declined greatly. People would rather have the one coming from nature, even if there were so few pesticides. We're not talking about organic versus non-organic. Yeah. We're talking about things that are actually, their DNA is modified internally as a seed, you know, before they ever start growing. And who knows what that modified DNA might do in our bodies. Yeah. There's no long-term results, and so we should be careful. And that's one of the points that has been made. So I'm all in favor of having a great FDA in regard to those items to look into those things. And, you know, if you want to be chewing bread that is technically healthy but actually made of ground-up wood pulp, that's your choice, but it should be your choice.
Yeah, like the genetically modified BT toxin corn, they design it, they splice the genes in the seed so the corn will produce its own toxic pesticide, so anything that eats it, it'll rupture the stomach and kill it. So they claim that it'll break down before it gets into the environment for the human consumption, but that hasn't been proven. And yeah, I want that stuff labeled too. Good. I don't want to eat it.
Yeah. You know, truth in packaging, as they call it. I want to move to the other editorial comment in the Press and Guide from this last Wednesday, July 11th. I mentioned today is Friday the 13th, which is always a lucky day for me. So don't be going around afraid or stay indoors, although it's hot outside. But, you know, don't worry about it. It's just a number, folks. And supposedly, somebody went backwards in history, and now they claim that Friday the 13th began because Friday the 13th, like in the 14th century, was when the Vatican gave the word to the King of France to go and kill all the Knights Templars, take over their property. So they had the French army go out, and I don't know, 50, 60 huge castles. They invaded them, took them over. And either they captured a few of the Knights Templar, like Jacques de Molay was the head of the Knights Templar then, and they had a big public hanging later for him, and he didn't recount anything he did. They wanted him to, but he refused at the end, gave a very impassioned speech. That's all recorded, folks. But anyway, the big attack on the Knights Templar was supposedly Friday the 13th.
No.
But they say that originally it didn't come from that. It's just, if you go backwards in time, you'll find a lot of bad things that happened on a particular Friday the 13th. Because, like, there's at least four of them every year. Just the way it happens in one, you know, out of 12 months. Three at least, if not four.
This is a third one, I believe, this year.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of bad things that are bound to happen, you know, on a Friday the 13th and a Friday the 12th and a Friday the 11th, but nobody goes and checks on that. So don't worry about it, folks. City settles lawsuit against Judge Summers on front page, top story, Press and Guide from this last Wednesday from J. Patrick Pepper. The agreement gives, so it was settled out of court, and it's the, so which lawsuit was that? There are several. Yeah, it was the one that hasn't gone to court yet, Sharon Langan, okay, who happens to be the 19th District Court Administrator right now. She is getting a $150,000 cash payment from the city. Okay, city is paying for that, to drop her suit, her lawsuit. And primarily that's because she's lucky to get that, because after the state of Michigan appointed as Chief Justice, Chief Administrator for the 19th District Court to be Richard Wiganek, then he decided to hire her back to her job that she had been dismissed from. Well, actually wasn't dismissed. She was demoted and hired a man to replace her. That's what Summers did. So he hired her into her original position, which sort of takes away the, you might say, the damages, because now she's got her job back. So, but what? How much money did she lose since she'd been demoted? They figured about $150,000. So it sort of took away all of her reappointment. They actually thought, I'm sure Wiganek thought, that since he's reappointed, she'd just drop the suit. They didn't drop it. So the city work this out? And you say, well, why did Reaganic reappoint her? If let's say the man who Somerset appointed was better qualified, let's say, in some way. And I'm sure he would say that. Well, he said, look, the city's going to have to pay now or it's going to have to pay later. And so she can do the job. He's not saying how well she can do it. I mean, it's not. But she can do the job. She's adequate for the job. So I'm going to appoint her now, and that'll take most of the onus away from the lawsuit. But they still had to pay another $150,000. Now, just in case you wonder, well, what about that $1.2 million in court costs and lawyer costs and from the other two suits? That's still to be decided. Okay, that's Julie Pucci, former deputy court administrator, and court probation officer Simon Calvis, both personal friends of Langren, and they all had the same lawyer, too. So those disputes over who's responsible for that payment, the state, the city, or Summers, have dragged out in those cases, and we just don't know, okay? The interesting thing is to me, of course, is that the city council, and we're going to have Tefelsky or someone else from the council comment on this, has constantly said, we don't need as many judges. We don't need as many administrators. And yet, when Summers tried to reduce the number of administrators, even though they have, according to the state of Michigan, one of the highest number of court cases, certainly higher per judge than any nearby district, and they're holding their own, but the city council, your administrative costs are too much, so you don't need that many people, and I don't think we need as many judges because judges are expensive. Well, that's crazy. How are you going to handle all those cases? And then they were even suggesting am I just implying? Didn't I read it? That certain people on the Dearborn City Council said, well, maybe you ought to cover costs, your fines ought to be higher. You ought to find more people guilty, they're implying, at least.
Oh, that'll work really good.
Guilty? Find you guilty just so they can help pay the bills? No, I don't want that pressure on the judges to find more people guilty or give a punishment fine that's higher than what it appropriately should be. And I don't know what that should be, and it depends on the situation. But it was almost the implication that our 19th district judges, including Hultgren, of course, Hultgren, Wiganek, and Summers right now, that they were letting too many people go free and clear, finding them not guilty, no fine, if they're not guilty, they shouldn't be found guilty just because you need more money.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to put more money in the district court if we have all these cases, and then the other idea was, we have a separate a program for drug cases and community service programs that cost extra money for the court. For as punishment, you've got to go out and do good things, not just pay money. I think that's wonderful. These are work programs to work out your debt to society where appropriate. I mean, not really serious criminals, but you've got to do so many probationary hours or whatever in
the
public
service.
Pick up
trash on the side of the road.
Yeah, but they have to be supervised, yeah. So that costs the money. They need vans to take them from the court out to where they're going to be doing the work. And I think that is very good, sensible punishment. It gets certain things done in our community too. But sure, it costs a little extra money. But I think that will be very, it's a good lesson for the people who commit those crimes, that it's not just a matter of, well, pay my fine, send me to jail, give me free room and board for a couple months, is that you actually have to make good what you did wrong that hurt people. And it can't apply to every kind of crime, of course, but anyway. So anyway, the lawsuit against Langren is settled. It's just a question, who's going to pay the $1.2 million, which has already gone through courts. The Langren case, remember, folks, never got to a court. It was scheduled, I guess, sometime in the next 6 months to a year, but never got to a court to even rule. So that's why they could settle out of court. Now, everybody can settle out of court, but who's going to pay the $1.2 million? they could settle now on those two previous cases, but I guess the city of Dearborn said, okay, we can pay the $150,000. Well, they're still paying the Langren salary, too, let's not forget. But we can't pay the $1.2 million. We're not going to settle out of court for that. And usually when you settle out of court, it's going to be less. But they've got the court rulings behind them now, so it's just, you know, they have to get paid that money. The court said somebody owes these other two people a total and their lawyers $1.2 million. So the city is still trying to negotiate with the state and or Summers about who's going to pay for what. Oh, my goodness. Okay, what was that editorial in the Press and Guide from Wednesday? Well, to be brief, you probably already heard it. Governor Snyder, since the Affordable Care Act, also known by the negativist as Obamacare, but in fact very good health reforms are included in that. Yes, there's a mandate that everybody, not quite everybody, there's still going to be 26 million. I didn't know that. I thought it was going to be 10 million, but 26 million people that won't have health insurance, even when the Affordable Care Act goes into effect in 2014, and no penalty for them, even. And I don't know how that works out, but I know it's the illegal immigrants don't have to buy insurance. but they go to hospitals and get treated for free, you know, so, oh well. Anyway, Governor Snyder said, okay, just like what's required for that act is that the state needs to set up its own health insurance organization to administer the national program, okay? And, of course, the state Republicans have said, no, 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 we're not going to do that because we're all against the whole point of the Affordable Care Act. And Snyder said, I want you to set this up. So we'll see where that goes. We'll see how that happens because I don't think it's going to come about. The Republicans will just not give Snyder the votes on that. But what's going to happen as a result? We're still going to get a statewide commission, but because we don't do it locally in this state, it's going to be set up by the federal government. The Republicans really want that? I mean, it will be set up by the federal government in the state of Michigan because these things have to be administered. Wouldn't we rather administer it ourselves? Isn't that a principle of local government? Okay, you're against the concept of the big plan, Michigan Republicans. Wouldn't you rather have the details administered locally? Of course you would. Don't tell me no. It's just one of those political years. We don't want to say yes to anything that Obama did that might be considered good by the voters for November 7th. Well, phooey, your basic principle is local control, smaller government. So if you're going to have the federal government set it up, they're going to control it all the way down to the state level, which means all the way down to the people. So shame on you. Governor Snyder's right on that, and the Dearborn Press and Guide has said that he's right on that. So it's got to be true. Oh, I don't know. But also, he said no to various provisions that people had to have picture IDs and so on in order to be able to vote. He logically, imagine somebody responding logically who's a politician, said, there is no evidence for the last 20 years of voter fraud in Michigan. Not anybody voting for a dead person. There's no, it never happened. At least nobody ever found out it had happened. And so we don't need all of this. It's going to keep some people, especially poor people, at the last minute from being able to vote, either in August or November. He said, that's undemocratic. If we don't need it, we shouldn't have it. Now, there was part of that that did get approved, by the way, a little teeny section where they're going to set up some administrators in the state to check on to cross-check so that people who are dead will not be allowed to vote.
Oh, that's a good thing.
And I think, yeah, no more of these walking dead voting. You know, I think that's totally wrong. Zombie apocalypse, maybe not when that happens.
Wasn't people pushing to prevent that, to purge the dead people off the list? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's going, and again, no evidence of voter fraud or anybody voting for a dead person. Obviously, the dead can't vote, but not yet anyway. But the whole point was there's no evidence of that voter fraud, but he went along with that provision. But they're going to have to talk about big government here. Thanks, Republicans.